now for something completely different.
Welcome to Shout Out. Out of the closet and into your ears.
Good evening and welcome to Shout Out.
On this week's show, we talked to Daryl Bullock about his new book that's also a movie.
And Cheryl Morgan talks to Canadian MP Randall Garrison about LGBT rights.
Plus the usual out-shout news and music.
All coming up in the next hour. Going to say you could just stand up.
Yeah, you don't have to stand up for us, Lucy.
I'm going to stand up.
I'd just like to apologise to listeners that the few seconds of silence was on purpose so that all the other stations can sync with us. Is that right?
Yeah, totally planned.
So that you and Andy could both watch me slowly sinking in my chair again. This is a running gag. Is it just me? Yeah. Or
no,
is it
happens every week.
Okay. Loyal listeners, yet another sinking chair.
Yeah.
So we got Daryl Bullock in the studio later.
I know. Yes. Yeah. We're going to hear your music that you recorded all those years ago.
Are you you mean me singing?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yes, it was you in a past life, wasn't it?
What? Florence Foster Jenkins. Yeah. Thanks, Andy.
A failed opera singer.
Well, you sound similar when you sing.
No. Her singing's much better than mine. Better.
Would you like to hear her singing?
Yeah, go on then. Yeah, let's have a track. I'd just like to say that's not me. Oh, sounds like me. Stop shaking your head, Lucy.
Yes. So, do you want to explain who she was? We're going to obviously talk about her in depth with Daryl later.
She was the worst opera singer on the planet.
Yeah.
So rumour had it. But because her husband was stinking rich.
Oh, was it her husband? I thought it was her.
No, she was rich, but her husband was super rich.
Oh, right.
Yeah. What amazed me when I was reading the book, because there's a lot of background stuff in the book, was that her father had the first brick-built Manhattan house.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, what were they made out of before? Straw?
Wood.
Oh, dear. You're so young, aren't you?
Sweeties.
So have you heard of Florence?
No, I'm not a big opera buff, so I've got to say.
Well, I'm not sure she was.
She definitely was not an opera buff.
Okay.
But anyway, we'd be
billed as the world's worst opera singer, wasn't she?
Well, at least she's the most something, you know.
But she filmed Carnegie Hall.
But I think that was because she bought all the seats and it was free to get in, was it not?
Her husband was very supportive of her, her talents, inverted commas. Where are you off to?
It's
all
right,
well?
I've obviously got one of the wrong seats this week because I don't normally have the one that goes up and down. So
automatically.
And if it carries on, I'll just join Lucy and we'll broadcast it up. It's a lot.
Okay.
We've never done that
before.
Well,
we can all stand up.
Actually, I did and Neri was the other side. She told me I was intimidating.
Okay, I prefer broadcasting standing up, actually.
Yeah, do you?
Yes, it's better for the diaphragm.
Oh, really?
Yes.
You really are going to sing for us today, aren't you?
Really?
Yeah, when you bust out those tunes, Steph, make sure when you're doing it.
I don't think so. Put the bed back on, please.
When you start doing your Madame Butterfly or whatever it is you're going to do.
Now, I do like that opera.
Yeah.
I do love Puccini's operas are my favourite. Madame Butterfly and my favourite of all time, Turandot.
I have never seen opera in my life, apart from like snippets on TV.
I've seen it on telly, but not.
Unless you count Phantom of the Opera, but that's slightly different.
I quite liked Carmen, Bizet. Yeah, that was quite fun. I don't know. Yeah. Opera snobs say that that's like, the populist one, but yeah, why not? You know, it's opera that everybody likes to hear, so, and most people recognise the tunes.
Yeah,
so
I'm not an opera.
Let's start there.
Yeah, it's a bit like red wine, you're either an expert or you're not.
Rioja, that's my favourite.
I think it's a bit like red wine. Mm. Most people aren't experts and they're quite happy to drink whatever's affordable.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes.
There you go.
How
far do you go up? 5, 6, 7 pounds a bottle?
What's my upper limit for red wine? If somebody else buys it for me?
What's the occasion?
Are just even just... in watching the telly when you get home from work.
About 8 quid.
I must say I don't drink, but my other half does.
I'm straight too, yeah.
Really? Do you keep telling yourself that? What does Carl think of that? That's going to be a shock to Carl when he listens to the
Well,
podcast.
I'm lying like you are. That's the point.
I don't know if it'd be nice to admit that I'd rather spend the money on the bottle that I'm going to be drinking myself rather than when I go around for dinner, just in case any of you ever invite me around for dinner. You know, maybe spend £7 on that bottle of
That's
wine.
All right.
Just take just it. Around.
I'll make your gravy out of Oxo.
Yeah, I think I've just been told now.
There's somebody you know out there. It's 45,000 average listeners across the six stations and the podcast. There's people that know you are listening.
Yeah, and they're like, she's not coming around again. Well, she best bring the gin.
Anyway, would you like a bit of good news? You can now legally get married on the Isle of Man. There we go. Get it right.
Yes, even
they
women.
Introduced same-sex marriage, haven't they? Or at least they passed the law. I don't know if it's approved it. I don't know if it's actually come in yet.
Even lesbians.
On the Isle of Man.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, now we want to see that Northern Ireland going the same route.
That's the next
They're
one.
Dragging their feet over there. Dragging their feet. Yeah. Bad time.
A lot of other things, yeah.
Anyway... Lucy.
Hello.
Shall we go?
Okay.
So, Outshout, our pick of the best events. So, this week with Lucy.
Yes. If people have sort of listened to what I've presented and done Outshout on previous weeks, you might notice that I kind of keep on going to three regulars because they're so good with their LGBT-themed programming. And that is the Cube Cinema, Beacons, Icons and Dicons, they're sort of like the programme that put together all the programming in various venues. And recently it's been the Cube. And also the Indigo Network. And they're great for LGBT or LBT themed programming in Bristol, and this week they've all got together in Awana at the Cube Cinema. Indigo Network, along with Beacons, Icons and Dicons, thank you guys for always doing this programming, are putting a night on this Saturday.
Oh, fab.
Yeah,
cool.
So there you go. It's a showing of a film, She Must Be Seeing Things, at the Cube.
Do we know what it's about?
The film. It came out in 1987. So noteworthy because, you know, I mean, it must be the same with gay men themed cinema as well.
Yeah.
Wasn't a lot of it in the 80s. Not a lot of it in the 80s or 90s. And so therefore, you know, people sort of really paid attention. So it was a 1987 film that came out. One of the actresses who starred in it, a woman named Lois Weaver, who's also a general sort of educator and activist for feminism and queer rights in general. She's going to be at the screening as well.
Oh, wow.
So that would be really good. In addition to that, there's going to be a performance. Sorry about this. In addition to the screening, there's going to be a performance by Isadora Vibes, who is a spoken word performer. So it's going to be generally the screening of the film and also performances from Lois Weaver and Isadora as well. So it's going to be a complete event.
Now, as far as I'm aware, they're actually not going to be showing all of the movie.
Right.
Because it's mainly going to be a discussion.
So,
it's only parts of the movie.
History, as it were. Yeah.
Cool. So is it a ticketed event? Have we got to go somewhere for tickets? Or can you buy them on the day?
You can either get them through the usual. Well, so if you go to either the Indigo website or the Cube Cinema website, you can get the tickets on there. And as again, you know, always very reasonably priced, the Cube. So £5 or £4 for concessions.
Oh, that's not bad at all.
Yeah, and in addition to that, if you don't... so the film's...
Especially if they got one of the people that was in it there.
Yeah, absolutely, And it's quite an interesting sort of film. You know, it was quite divisive at the time it came out, because it was about jealousy. It's about jealousy within a relationship and whether the other partner is, whether their jealousy is well-founded or not. And so, you know, it kind of divided a lot of women. And there were some, as again, you know, I'm quoting the great god, the internet here, there were some reviewers when it came out who disapproved of the fact that it's kind of hinted that the infidelity is to do with, it's between a two women who are in the partnership. And the infidelity is to do with one of the women being unfaithful with a man. And they were like, oh, what, again, really? Because it's a bit of a trope in lesbian TV and cinema is that one of them always goes back to the man, you know. And I know
it's a bit like a lot of the gay movies and like at the time always portrayed as so hard done by and everything this, you know.
Oh, yeah, well, we've got a few in lesbian TV and cinema. Generally, the lesbian character always dies or goes back to a man. Right. Those are the two things that happen. They're never allowed to settle down and live happily ever after.
It sounds akin to ones like A Beautiful Thing, which is a very well-known gay movie about two teenage boys who fall in love.
Okay.
On a council estate. And
Is that, did that come out about the same time, or
I think that was a bit later. I think that was 90s. Ironically, most of the people who are in it are now in EastEnders. Which is
there we go.
Seriously.
Yeah. So it's a good bit. It's, you know, if you like your gay film history, it's a good thing to check out, definitely. And for those people, regular Indigo and Hush goers who possibly aren't that into the film, there's going to be a Hush night afterwards at the same venue, so, and that's just £3 to go. So if you don't want to see the film but you just want to go along to the party afterwards, then you can do that too.
Fab. Cool.
Yeah.
Sounds good. I guess as usual it's all on our website.
It will be, yes.
It will. Nice cover.
Again, fair play to Hush and Beacons, as I'll call them, because they also sometimes do an absolute solid and put it on the website as well. But if it's not there, I'll make sure it's there tonight. Cool. So, again, thank you again to those lovely people for doing all this great themed programming.
I get the impression you're going to be there, aren't you?
No, actually, it's the Tour de Yorkshire this weekend. Oh. So that's not LGBT themed at all, so I won't really talk about it. But I've gone back home. I'm going back home to the motherland. To cheer on Lizzie Armitstead.
Traitor.
She's a local girl. Yeah.
Cool. Okay, thank you very much, Lucy.
No worries.
Hi, we're Dr. Mika, and you're listening to Shout Out.
Shout Out.
LGBT radio for you.
The Shout Out Podcast.
Well, I haven't heard them for a while. That's Dr. Mika.
Yeah, featuring Shan Evans, Bristol Music at its best.
It's called Right Back.
Yeah.
So, they've been at Pride a few times, haven't they?
Yes, they have, yeah. They play some really good music.
Yeah. I seem to remember them having lots of kit on the stage, as I recall.
Yeah.
Played lots of instruments and more stripy outfits. It was quite cool.
Yeah, wild.
Yeah. Yeah. Just like even your heyday.
Really? Right, we've got Daryl Bullock in the studio.
Hello, good
Darryl.
Evening.
You okay?
Yeah, I'm very well, thank you.
Nice to have you back.
Thank you very much, Andy.
So, for those of you that don't know our history, Shout Out has a huge history, Daryl, because before we actually got on air, of course, you were working for Venue Magazine.
I was, yeah.
And it was thanks to a kind of mini campaign that you kicked off that basically ended up causing Shout Out to end up on air, which was brilliant. Of course, now we're years down the line on six stations and doing well. And now we're talking to you about books.
Yeah, this is the second time we're going to talk about one of my books.
Yeah, the last one was all about Unusual Records, as I recall, wasn't
That's
it?
Right, yeah, the World's Worst Records and the first one, which was 3 years ago now. Yeah.
Now, did I hear you right when we were outside? That's what led to the discovery of the person we're going to talk about today?
Kind of, yes. I've always been interested in bad music. Kind of like those people who like bad movies, you know. When I was writing the first book, I wanted it to be a history lesson, if you like, of bad records. So it started in the 30s, went right through to the 80s or 90s.
Yeah.
And the first person I featured was somebody who'd started their recording career in the 1940s. And that is the lady we're about to discuss. Yes. And she's a favourite of mine. Yeah.
Really? So.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is that because she's one of the worst?
Oh, she's absolutely one of the worst. I think it's absolutely fair to say that, although she
you
only
haven't heard me, Daryl, I think I must be the worst.
Yeah, but you haven't released records and something to the public. Yes, definitely.
I haven't filled Carnegie Hall yet.
And you haven't filled Carnegie Hall.
No.
She did fill Carnegie Hall, you know.
She did.
And some.
We did play a little bit top of show, but have a listen to this is what we're basically talking about. This is a song called Like a Bird. I promise, I don't know how much I can...
You're killing our listeners. Oh.
Oh dear.
But her husband supported her 110%. He was the guy who kept pushing her.
She's lovely. I mean, that's a real kind of love story. But of course, she is. It's not you that gave her the name the world's worst opera singer, I'm assuming.
No. Florence Foster Jenkins, who we're talking about, and the song you just played is a song that she actually wrote the lyrics for. It's quite a rarity.
Right.
Of the nine songs that she recorded and it exists, that's the one she wrote that she actually wrote the lyrics for herself. Where are we going? She was accepted very, very readily, very quickly as being absolutely terrible. And the reason people fought so hard to get a ticket to go and see her perform was because she was accepted by the condescent, if you like, of New York in the 40s as being a joker, burlesque, a cabaret, a mad cabaret.
Did she know how bad she was, though?
I think she did, personally. And I think one of the points in the book I make is that she wasn't as stupid as people make her out to be.
Mm.
She kept all her clippings. She kept her cuttings. And she went so far as when people wrote about her and would criticise her to go back to them and say, well, actually, no, you're wrong about this. You know, she was very aware of what people were saying about her. She may not have agreed with them, but she certainly knew that people weren't always 100% for her, if you like.
But her husband was very protective, wasn't he?
Yeah, and the husband's a story as well, because was he a husband? She spent, 30-plus years with this gentleman, Sinclair Bayfield, who was born in Cheltenham, but moved to New York in the 1910s.
Cheltenham here,
yes, just on the road. Yes, Cheltenham here, and a nice little Georgian house just off Pittville Park.
Oh, right.
And they never married officially. They had what they call a kind of civil marriage in front of a couple of friends in a hotel, but they never went through a proper marriage ceremony. Yeah. And one of the issues about her life, or about her death, rather, is that after she died, St. Clair spent months and months and months battling with her relatives and through the courts to try and get recognition of the fact that he'd spent, 30-plus years of his life with her, and that he was... in fact, her husband.
Mm. Mm. No, they were both rich, weren't they? Especially him.
Well, Sinclair wasn't at all. No. Sinclair was a jobbing actor and had no money at all.
Really?
Yeah, so he was very poor.
Where did the money come from?
The money came from her side of the family.
Right. Now, they had the first brick-built house in Manhattan, is that right?
Her mother's family were the Hansons, or Jansons, I think it was, came over from Holland to New York, as was then kind of New Amsterdam, I guess it was called, and they built the first brick house on Manhattan Island. That's absolutely true, yes.
Wow.
Her father's family were directly related to William the Conqueror. So there's a big, big history within these two families. And
there was also a tramway as well, wasn't there?
Well, her father built up quite a big fortune of his own, and he was the head of the first streetcar-cum-tram system in Wilkes-Barre.
Yeah. So hers was initially through inheritance, then?
Got her money through inheritance, right. Yes. When her father died in 1909, she and her mother were the only two surviving relatives, or immediate relatives, rather. Got his fortune split 50-50, and at that point his fortune was around about $1.5 million, which would be
30, yeah, 10 million.
Yeah, it was a lot of money.
Yeah.
A lot of money they got. And then her mother died in, I think it's 1930. So at that point, being the only survivor, she got everything.
And went on to sing.
She was doing very, very well financially. She did okay.
Because when you look it up, and of course, we'll talk more about it in a minute, but they have made a film of this, although it's a bit more of a dramatisation, you might say.
Hugh Grant and Meryl Streep.
They do, you see, like, the Opera House packed, but she can't sing at all. How on earth did she pack out an opera house if she couldn't sing?
Well, Carnegie Hall, which was her last show in 1944, was packed out. They were scalping tickets for 10 times the cost outside.
Wow.
People were desperate to get in. I think 2,000 people were turned away from the show. I think the thing about Florence is most of her performances, and there are dozens and dozens of performances before Carnegie Hall, they were done very, very low key and quite private, and amongst people that knew her and liked her. She's a very likable person.
Yeah.
So they knew her and liked her and kind of supported her and didn't really tell her.
As in, like, they were friends then?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Would they have paid to have gone and seen her, or did she just do these little private performances?
She did a lot of private performances. She would charge a ticket price for people that weren't direct friends,
right?
But most of the audience were friends and family. She spent most of her time raising money for charity. This is in the years immediately before World War II. She raised what today would be millions of pounds.
Wow.
for charities, mostly for the Red Cross in America and the Red Cross in Italy. She set up music clubs. She supported artists like Toscanini. She was a massive philanthropist. She gave a lot to people, and so they indulged her. You know, they thought, well, she's giving so much to us. She's so kind, so generous, and all this kind of stuff. We'll let her have a little kind of mad, you know, performance on stage in front of a few friends once a year. And it was only really when she finally started recording and then did the Carnegie Hall show that the public got to hear it, and then it became this massive travesty, if you like.
Why was it a travesty then? Well, the public didn't receive her well?
Because the public suddenly were in there, and newspapers were in there, reporters were in there, and reporters could suddenly start saying that this is awful. She can't sing. She can't carry tune in the bucket. You know, she's a joke.
Well, do we know how her record sold?
Oh, the record sold very poorly. But in all fairness, she really only had them pressed for... to give away to friends and to sell if she could sell. They weren't really made with any eye on the charts of the 1940s. Yeah. It was really just to... I think her words
were... It was the days of records that you put a needle on in case you're listening, kids.
Exactly that. I think what she said was basically that... it's to leave a souvenir from when I'm gone.
Yeah.
So we'll leave a little recording. It's kind of like somebody leaving a bit of film footage or whatever else it might be. I don't think she ever thought of them as an income stream.
So when she put these out and the public found out, was that the point when they suddenly all wanted to go see her perform?
Oh, very much so, yeah. Yeah, it became the ticket to have.
If you could laugh at her? Or
very
to,
much. Right. A lot of people did, yes. A lot of people went purely to laugh, to treat it as a cabaret or some kind of burlesque kind of show.
I mean, you have to wonder how her friends didn't laugh when she or cringe, I suppose, when they're listening to what we just listened to.
Well, lots of them did.
But they kept it quiet.
But they had this kind of affectation where they would kind of stuff handkerchiefs in their mouths or the fists or whatever else it might be. Just Cole Porter was a huge fan, and Cole Porter used to grind his walking cane into his foot to stop him laughing. Cole Porter would go to every show he could get a chance to go. He loved her.
Just to support her.
Absolutely.
She must have been a really nice person for people to put up with it like that.
There are two trains of thought. There are certain people that think they know about Florence and will say that she was an absolute tartar and she was a megalomaniac and absolutely crazy and totally focused on being a diva. But there are, what I think I found during my research is that actually, no, she was a much calmer, much more gentle person. She was very good at reinventing herself when she needed to. There's lots of stuff about her past she'd bury and wouldn't talk about.
Right.
There was an early marriage which she kept very quiet and all sorts of things that went on there. There's a possibility that she contracted syphilis from her first husband. She never really talked about that, but you wouldn't, would you?
Well,
you know, there's all sorts of things.
I don't know how treatable it was by then.
Well, it wasn't. You used to take mercury, and it kind of...
Oh, good Lord.
One of the suggestions that she sang so badly is that the years of mercury poisoning may have sent her a bit too low.
Well, yes, quite possibly. You know. Who knows?
But she appears to have been very liked, very loved.
Mm.
By her immediate friends and her big social, massive social circle, so they supported her. So they wouldn't criticise her as much as maybe people would today.
Now there's film coming out, isn't there?
Yeah, next week, isn't it?
That's right. Next
it's
Friday.
Not. It's not directly based on your book, but there must be some, because you've done an awful lot of research into it. So there must be some similarities. But from what you were saying, the book gives you a lot more of the background of the family.
I think if you go and see the movie, it's still worthwhile reading the book because the book gives you the depth.
So have you had much contact with the people that made the film? Do you know what they've done with it, or have you only seen the bits on YouTube like we have?
I've pretty much seen the bits on YouTube. Right. I've seen a little bit small, but not much. I've not been involved in any way with the film, but it's happenstance. They both happened around the same time. There is a second film being made currently by a German company. They're making a documentary about her life, and they've been in touch with me, and they've asked if I would possibly be up for being interviewed for the film if they use that. And there's a third film which came out last year, a French movie called Marguerite, which is basically based on Florence's life, although they've given the characters different names, but it's the same kind of story. The new film out next week, as Steph says, it's... they're taking it very much as a kind of they've used the comedy elements of their life, and there's a lot that's funny. There's a lot to laugh at, but there's a lot of tragedy as well in that life, and I think they've basically gone for the laughs. There's a lot of stuff in the film that, from what I've seen so far, that isn't strictly true, but they've kind of as movies do, as TV programs do, they've adapted it, they've enhanced it, they've bigged it up a bit just to make it a bit more watchable.
You know? Yeah, well, they do, don't they? I mean, they're film companies, so they have to. So, you know, your book is well and truly on sale.
It is. Thank you. Yes, it came out last week. Yeah.
So, I don't suppose you have a website for it, do you? I didn't think to ask.
No. There's the publisher is Duckworth, ducknet.co.uk, I think it is.
Cool. Yes, it is. Yes, correct.
There you go. or amazon.co.uk.
Cool. I guess one of the best things we can probably do then is put the ISBN number up on the the website. So, well, listen, it's fascinating. Fascinating to talk about her. It sounds like you must have had an awful lot of fun researching.
I really did, and the best was kind of chatting to people that knew her or had a direct link with her. And
so you've spoken to people who actually knew her.
I've spoken to people that saw her play live or perform. Yes, I saw people that were there at Carnegie Hall. There are some quotes in the book from people who were actually in the audience that night that I've managed to speak to. And and I've spoken to relatives and relatives of her piano player, Cosme, who's played in the film by Howard from Big Bang. That was the best thing about writing the book, to be honest, was meeting or at least talking and interviewing people that had a direct attachment to this almost mythical figure.
Cool.
Yeah. That's fantastic. I've loved it. I've loved every second of it.
It's a good read. It is a good read. Cool. I should be watching the movie. But the book is, it just gives you so much depth about the family and how they got their money and where they come from. So there's a lot.
The book is called Florence Foster Jennings by Daryl Bullock. See, this is why we have a website. I'll put the ISBN number up later and it'll all be fine. So, but we will do that and make sure. So if anyone does want to read the book, they can go find it on all the various services that are out there. So, but listen, thank you so much for coming and talk to us about it.
Thank you, Daryl.
And you have to pop us an email or something. Let us know what you think of the film.
I will.
That'd be cool.
Thank you.
Anyway, do stay with us. You're listening to Shout Out. News headlines up next.
The Shout Out podcast.
Chicane.
Give it up.
On that one. Yeah. I like that. I haven't heard that one in ages.
Yeah, no, well, it was quite old. Back in the 90s, that one.
Really old. I remember clubbing to that. Don't say old.
Well, when you think of what I was clubbing to, I Want You Back by Michael Jackson. Jackson 5.
Yes. Those were the days.
Yeah, moving
classic
on.
Song. There's nothing wrong with clapping to that music.
Very quick, doesn't it?
I was at Pomp.
I think you might have picked the wrong edit there. Never mind.
No. I know it's coming to an end, but that's why you're talking.
Bit of a cut off. Fair enough. So, anyway, hello, boys.
Hello. I was going to say, I was once clubbing in Manchester and Blondie came on, and I said to the guy dancing next to me, "You do realise that none of the other people here were born when this track came out."
Yeah, but they still dance to the classics.
Well, they do. Yeah. It's like ABBA survived.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Abracadabra.
Because the only thing now is the needle doesn't bounce when people are dancing on the floor. That used to happen on the records, didn't it?
I used to have a mobile disco that I did for 10 years in the 70s. And that was a nightmare. You'd do pubs and they'd have the wooden floors.
Do you not have the spring-loaded
turntables? No, I had to wait the arms down with
two P pieces or something.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness, this is whole new.
We're talking of 2D, not 2P.
See, when I was DJing in the 90s, it was all CD, but even them, if you didn't have expensive ones, they jumped.
Mm. Yeah, they can
with
do,
the bass,
they, yeah.
You know.
So, I used to get such stage fright. I was like shaking. I had real trouble getting the needle onto the vinyl.
Anyway, we're moving into the show kind of territory here. Let's get some news headlines.
This is Shoutout News on Thursday, the 28th of April.
The founder of Bangladesh's first and only LGBT magazine has been killed in a brutal attack this week. 35-year-old Zulhas Manan was killed on Monday in his apartment in Dhaka by a group of assailants who posed as couriers. It's the latest in a series of horrific murders of bloggers and activists, and there are claims that extremists were behind the attack.
The atheist and pro-science network the Richard Dawkins Foundation reports that British travellers thinking of visiting the US and checking the government website for travel tips will find an official warning about anti-LGBT laws in North Carolina and Mississippi. It is, quote, both frightening and embarrassing that one of the US's staunchest allies has warned its citizens of the risks, a human rights campaign spokesperson added.
You may have seen on our website our coverage of the mini row that has brewed up largely in the pages of the Bristol Post between the current mayor of Bristol, Mr. George Ferguson, and Woodlands, an evangelical church in the Clifton area of the city. It's over a past email on the issue of marriage equality. Cynical commentators have suggested that the newspaper might be trying to generate a war of words between LGBT campaigners and Christians, what with the mayoral election approaching. Today, the Bristol Post reported that the canon of Redland Parish Church had waded into the debate, saying that he deplored homophobia, but that Mr. Ferguson should have attended a hustings at Woodlands Church to engage with the Christian community, amongst whom he said there were a variety of views on marriage equality. 13 candidates are standing for the election, and you can visit Bristol City Council's website for a full list of those candidates.
Cyndi Lauper has been a friend to the LGBT community since her debut in the early 1980s, and her breakout 1984 hit single Girls Just Wanna Have Fun is a camp classic and feminist anthem. But were you aware that Lauper, who is a patron of an LGBT homelessness charity in the States, was also well-versed in country music? Well, she's the front cover star on this month's issue of Maverick, an independent country music magazine published across the globe. In it, she discusses her life and work and her musical influences in the country genre.
Martha Burke, writing at the progressive newswire Common Dream, says that the war on woman was a phrase used to describe some of the views expressed during the 2012 presidential election campaign. However, she argues that it's still just as descriptive in the current race for the White House, with Republican nominees lining up to, she argues, wage war on women's reproductive rights and economic survival.
Like a short, curly-haired Jewish Alan Bennett. Well, that's how a BBC Radio 4 producer describes the top London female comic, Sarah Sheldon, who is joining forces with Saban Kazim, star of The Comedy Store. Both of these are coming to Bristol to raise money for a cause close to many LGBT hearts, Bristol Mindline, the service which provides a listening ear and helpful suggestions on all manner of mental health support issues. Sheldon and Kazim are hilarious and both performed at last year's Camden Fringe Festival. The event takes place at the Hen and Chicken on North Street in Bristol's Southfield district on Saturday the 7th of May, and details are available by visiting bristolmind.org.uk. The Hen and Chicken does renowned good pizzas, so why not make this a night out to remember?
And finally, the network Karma Nirvana might be a new name for you, but listen up. They are a national charity that supports all victims of honour-based abuse and forced marriage, a major campaigning issue for both feminists and LGBT campaigners. On the 12th of May, they are holding a Women's Empowerment Roadshow in Hammersmith with Jasvinda Sangira being a keynote speaker. Search Karma Nirvana online for more information.
For these news stories and more, check out our website at shoutoutradio.lgbt.
For Shoutout News, this has been Matthew Tosh
and Terry Starr.
Shoutout News.
National and international LGBT news for you.
Hi, this is Nikki French and you're listening to Shoutout.
Shoutout.
LGBT radio for you.
The Shoutout podcast.
Oh, Nikki French.
Yes. You said that almost in a French accent.
That's really not a French accent, is it? So that's called This Love. You mean it's an anthem, do you?
It's a gay anthem, yep. Yeah. Remixed by Seventh Heaven.
It was her other one that I used to really like. The one that she was really famous for.
Yeah, I've got...
Turnaround. It's not called Turnaround, though. What's it called?
No, it was a cover, wasn't it? And it was either that one or...
Total Eclipse of the Heart.
That's the one.
That's the one.
Yeah.
I really like that.
Yeah, that is good. I've got a remix of that as well by Seventh Heaven.
But, I mean, she didn't actually do the original, did she? No. Bonnie Tyler did the original.
It was.
So.
Yeah, way.
So. Anyway, what are we up to now?
Cheryl Morgan is going to be talking to Canadian MP Randall Garrison. As we all know, there's varying LGBT rights around the world. And so she just popped over to Canada to have a chat.
Did she?
This is Cheryl Morgan for Shoutout Radio. I've found Randall Garrison, who is an MP here in Canada, an openly gay man who has been very active in trans rights as well. But we should probably start off, Randall, with the situation for gay rights. So I'm sure our listeners will be interested in what goes on in Canada. So what sort of rights do gay and lesbian people have here?
Well, we've had for more than 20 years now most of the basic rights that other Canadians also enjoy, including the right to equal marriage and protections against discrimination and against hate crimes. And the major gap in the LGBT protections is for the T, where they're not specifically included in the Canadian Human Rights Code or in the hate crimes section of the Criminal Code.
So do you have the right for trans people to change their identities legally in Canada?
No, it's still very much a struggle here. There is a limited right, is what I would call it, which requires psychiatrists, doctors, all kinds of outside validators, rather than depending on the person's own identity.
Canada, of course, is a large country divided up into provinces and territories. Do you have the situation like you have in the U.S., where people have different rights in different parts of the country?
No, we don't, because the criminal law and basic human rights law is federal in Canada, and so we don't have that kind of situation, except when we come to matters like employment discrimination and housing discrimination, which are provincial matters. And there we have 7 of the 10 provinces and 1 of the 3 territories, which do provide full protection to all the LGBT community, including the T. But there are still 2 provinces and 2 territories which do not.
Hey, so can you now tell us a little bit about the private members bill that you sponsored in the Canadian Parliament for trans people?
Well, I'm the LGBT spokesperson for the New Democratic Party, which is one of the 3 major parties in Canada. And in the last Parliament, we had a Conservative majority government. And so when I introduced a private members bill, the chance of that passing seemed very remote to most people. And in fact, only 3 private members bills got through the last Parliament. The other 2 were basically motherhood kind of bills. So mine was the only contentious bill. I did manage to get 18 Conservatives, including 8 cabinet ministers, to vote for my bill. But Canada has this archaic second house, much like the House of Lords. But in Canada, it has full legislative powers. And so the Senate in Canada killed my bill simply by talking it out rather than voting on it. And when the election was called, it died. So we're starting over in this Parliament.
And how has the move to the new Trudeau government changed the position for trans people in Canada?
Well, I just met last week with the Minister of Justice, and she's assured me that my private member's bill will be reintroduced as a government bill. And one of the quirks of our system is that government bills are almost never defeated in the Senate. So when they do that, within, I expect, weeks rather than months, we should make relatively rapid progress toward equal rights.
And is the bill that you got, this is largely about hate crimes, I understand it, and discrimination. Where are you in terms of things like self-determination of gender?
Well, once we add gender identity and gender expression to the Human Rights Code, then I've just really begun the work of changing all those other government regulations which restrict the rights of trans people, but they will no longer stand up in court. And I actually believe with the current government that will make relatively rapid progress.
Well, that sounds very encouraging, Randall. So thank you ever so much for all the great things you're doing for trans people in Canada.
Oh, well, thanks very much. I would say I'm working with trans people in Canada rather than doing things for them. It's been very much a joint effort.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Heather Small, and you're listening to Shout Out.
Shout Out.
LGBT radio for you.
The Shout Out Podcast.
Oh, your hero.
She is my hero. Yes. I keep writing to her saying I'm ready for her next hug.
Isn't she tweeting you quite regularly?
She retweets. But I don't think it's her. I think she's much too busy. It's probably her
management or
her people that do.
Do you not have people that tweet for you then, Steffi?
Really?
So, don't tell me you do.
No, I don't. I tweet for many people.
Heather Small was searched for a hero. That was her own, isn't it? There's not an M People track, that one.
No, I don't know when M People actually. Terry will know, because hang on.
Yeah, I'm not sure, but I do have an interesting. I was just telling Matthew when we were off mic, is that Peter Tatchell was once asked, who would you be on Stars in Your Eyes? And he said, I'd be Heather Small from M People.
Really?
Isn't that wonderful? Yes, it did.
Brilliant.
Yeah. Oh, she's lovely. Yeah. She really is nice.
Yeah, headlined at Pride last year.
Yeah, we got to.
We had great fun interviewing her, didn't we? Yeah. In fact, I seem to remember, Matthew, you caught her before we were kind of going on air.
She was there, and I thought, well, we're on air, so why not have a chat?
Yeah. And she has a microphone under her nose.
I did, yeah.
Now, talking of being on air, you guys are up to something this coming Monday when I'm away, aren't you?
Yes, we're back on Monday because on BCFM we're having a very special fundraising day as part of a project to get some young people over from a favela in Brazil, in Rio, and bring them to Bristol. So we're having a radiothon, and there's a shout out special as part of that.
Yeah, one till two, is that right?
One till two. Monday afternoon. Second of
yes, I'm really sorry. I wish I could join you. I'm away in London, a wedding for the weekend. So, but I hope it goes well. And if you're listening, tune in and join them. So it's only on BCFM, I hasten to add. Yeah. If you're listening on the other stations, but don't forget you can also listen on the live stream on Shoutout's website.
Yeah. Fabulous.
Massive fundraising campaign on that day.
And you're planning to kind of give some info on things like Pride as well, aren't you?
Well, yeah, we'll talk about Pride and what acts are on, and also the evening event, which is called Illuminate.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's going to be fun, seeing everyone dressed up for that. Because, of course, technology's come on so much now, you can get those kind of like LED wires.
You get all in your clothes and everything. That's right, yeah. Fibres that light up.
It's going to be huge for Bristol this year because we've got the whole of Millennium Square, haven't we? We've got the amphitheatre, Harbourside. It's going to be really
going to be a very, very big event.
Talking of the Harbourside, there's a big minesweeper parked in it at the moment.
Yes, but it nearly crashed on its way in through the Cumberland Basin because it got caught by the wind because it was a bit breezy and it sort of slammed into the side, yeah.
Oh, God, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's parked up. I keep passing it every day on my way to work.
Parked? Do you park a boat?
Parked. You know what I mean. Moored up.
Handbrake on.
And did you spot any sailors on the boat?
Yes. No. There were one or two.
A little waver in the voice there, Andy.
Well, you know, it's nice to see them there anyway, so still. Anyway, that is it for this week.
For the podcast and information from tonight's show, just go to shoutoutradio.lgbt.
Join us again. Well, don't forget we're on Monday as well as a special, but do join us again next week when we're going to be reporting from Mexico City.
Nice.
Wow.
But yeah, for myself and the team, say bye-bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Shout out. LGBT radio for you.